Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I feel like I've been away for a long, long time. Oh, it's just a week. Going far away makes that feeling. I feel as happy as my cat is happy that I came home. Yay! So we have visitors tonight. Welcome. We should do introductions around.
I'm Ellie.
Kelly.
Nina.
Jean.
Nico.
Steve.
Judy.
Wendy.
Karen.
Well, it's lovely to see you all. I'm not sure where we are because I don't know what Jill talked about last week, so you can tell me.
She talked about Shantideva.
Shantideva, that's right.
So it wasn't specifically about the precepts, but we didn't go by the precepts.
Good. Great. So we're on the ninth precept, which is everybody's favorite. It's no being angry. So I have to explain to our visitors that the precepts are not moral imprecations from on high, or like our kindergarten teacher shaking a finger and saying, you've got to be perfect, don't you ever, ever do these things like no killing, no stealing, no lying, etc. They are instead ways of keeping us awake to what we do as we do it, instead of blindly flailing around in an angry way. If we keep the precepts in mind, we wake up to what we're doing in the middle of it and think, oh no, here I go again. And then begin to look at why. What is it that's triggering this? And there's always a wound in us, something that gets touched. We say we're touched off and we blow up. Wonderful language to express that. Kablooey, sometimes we just blast away and then regret it later. This is a very important thing to understand about ourself, and it's about ourself, because the Buddhist understanding is that although we are individual, meaning we're undivided being, there's just this little one hunk of each one of us, that each one of us takes in everything else. So although we're completely alone, everything is our experience. So they say with this precept, if you imagine yourself in the person you're mad at, in that person's shoes, just flip the switch and put yourself in that person's mind and begin to consider the situation from the other side. There are always sides. We have a split mind, or a mind that likes to separate things. There's always black and white, up and down, back and forth, in and out. All of those ways that we see things are ways that create a tremendous imbalance if we become attached to one side or the other side. And in anger, we often are clutching hard to one side. This is my idea, and I know it's right. And you come up with another one. So many battles have been fought over practically nothing, because there never is actually two sides. There's always a middle place. Always a middle place. In Holland, I hear they took pitchforks and axes against each other over one little phrase in the Bible. Villages took arms against each other. If you read history, you see it all the way through. And yet we all belong together. We're all in the same family. We're human beings. In kindergarten, I always say, I think we're just very undeveloped and we can't quite see clearly often who it is we are, how marvelous we are. So, Dogen calls this not advancing, not retreating, not real, not empty. There is an ocean of bright clouds. There is an ocean of solemn clouds. There is so much of this and that, bright and dark, so much of everything. Not real, not empty, not coming, not going. Always coming, always going, always dissolving into something else. Thich Nhat Hanh said, treat your anger with the utmost respect and tenderness, for it is no other than you yourself. Do not suppress it, simply be aware of it. When you are aware of your anger, it is transformed. If you destroy anger, you destroy the Buddha, for Buddha and Mara, the devil, are of the same essence. Mindfully dealing with anger is like taking the hand of a little brother. We can hold ourselves in our pain. And usually anger is based on fear and some kind of pain. And if we can manage to hold ourselves, care for ourselves, it means that the self that we thought we were defending and championing, the great me, is just our little brother. Just this tender one that we are. Koban said, if you become angry, you don't stop being Buddha. Anger appears, that's all. Making a judgment about yourself can be dangerous because you cover up reality. To turn the contents of anger into wisdom, you live it and learn something from it. Anger is suffering. Anger is clinging to the self, to this noble self that we keep pretending and protecting ourselves with. Koban also said to be here as a human being is a natural arrangement. This is his Japanese way of talking. A natural arrangement to be a human being but how rare it is. It is a miraculously rare thing. So we have utmost respect and care for our own life, for we are radiant life. We shine. You truly shine. So Bodhidharma's version of this is very interesting and helpful. His way of expressing this is that self-nature is inconceivably wondrous. In the Dharma of no self, not postulating a self is called the precept of refraining from anger. Not presenting your own idea of who you are. I don't try to defend my idea of who I think I am. Because the truth is, we don't know who we are. We only know as we express ourselves, as we live. And as we look in retrospect back and think, oh my gosh, did I do that? Did I say that? If you really think about and watch how things unroll, open up in your life, it's always that way. Our understanding and knowledge of ourself comes after. In the middle of it, it's just coming through. It's very mysterious. And of course, we can become very self-conscious and try to figure out how to present ourselves and prepare the words in our mind that we're going to say and then pronounce them like we're giving a speech. But that's not authentic at all. That's just a pretend. That's a pretend person. And the real person is sort of shivering back behind all those words in a way. Or at least that's how I thought about it when I was always doing that, because I was terrified most of the time trying to learn how to speak. I always wrote my talks and read them. It was so boring. Everybody went to sleep. And training in Zen, a lot of the training in Zen is how to speak up with your own voice, your own authenticity, your own reality, and see what it is. It's like painting a picture. You don't know what you're going to end up with until you've done it. Or writing something, you don't know what you're going to write, even though you think you do. But as you do it, something comes up that is authentically yours, although you don't know where it came from. It's very mysterious, and it's important to be aware of it and to honor it in yourself and in others. Not postulating a self, not inventing a self to be, but just being what it is. So, Daido talked about this a little bit, but not very much. He said, we want things to be different. We constantly try to influence and change the course of events to fit our own preconceived notions and satisfy our endless desires. That's part of our making things up. trying to control them. And so much of our life is really out of our hands entirely. We did not choose to be born, and we don't know when we're going to die. And everything in between is kind of up for grabs, although we try to keep it in a tidy form. It slips out from under us over and over again. I always think, instead of being disappointed, that we can just develop an ability to be surprised. Oh, wow, I wasn't expecting this. And just be with what's happening, rather than trying to create another world out of the actual world that we're in, the actual life that we're living. Dido says also, anger is incredibly debilitating. We come into practicing Zen searching, wanting to take care of our questions and doubts, but we carry into our practice all the baggage that has prevented our life from unfolding harmoniously. The baggage is our entangled conglomeration of ideas and positions that have worked together to cause our suffering. It is the deep-seated conditioning that has stifled us and impinged on the lives of others. So in practicing Zen, we have to see what ideas, what thoughts are continually passing through our mind, what notions that we treasure, what things are important to us, the happy memories and the plans for the future, the novels and the stories that we tell ourselves as we sit. Actually, we're doing that all the time. It's just that when you sit down and we don't do anything else, we notice it. Actually, we're moving around all the time so that we're distracted. But when we sit down and not move, don't move, suddenly there's no way to run away from it. Some people try to stop it, but you can't stop your mind. You cannot stop those thoughts from winging through you, but you don't have to pay attention to them. You don't have to believe them. In fact, you don't have to pay any mind to them at all. Or if they're disturbing thoughts, you can bow to them and say, oh, thank you very much, and just let it go. Because it's all just thinking. It's not real. Not one little bit of it is real. What's real is right here, right now. This is real. It's a little bit warm. There's a little breeze. This light is getting a little down a bit. Yeah. And we're just sitting here, face to face, talking about anger. It's amazing, isn't it? And yet each one of us brought in a whole world of thinking and ideas and thoughts and plans and all the things that go into making a very confused kind of life, and often a lot of suffering if we aren't aware of what this is, of how this drives us, and how much of it is what we've been taught as true without being tested by ourselves, because we're our bottom line. We're the ones who actually can tell what is true, because it's our life. And sometimes that's very difficult, because we all want to fit in, we all want to be liked, and often we don't. In some way or another, each one of us is unique. And again, kindergartners or undeveloped human beings have difficulty with difference. But that's just a very undeveloped, immature, unripe way of being in the world as human beings. And we have so much potential and so much ability to be with each other. So the precept of no being angry gives us an opportunity every time we get stirred up and the adrenaline starts to flow to really just stop and look at it and ask ourselves, where is this coming from? And we get to know ourselves a little better and maybe be a little more helpful, more available to apologize if we need to, because we make all kinds of mistakes, and anger is one of the best mistakes we can make. It's so natural. So no being angry does not mean don't be angry. Just means wake up. Wake up and don't fall asleep. So this is your chance to talk about your experience with anger, you yourself, if you like.
For me, about anger is putting it off on someone else or some other people. That I think there's so much projection that goes on with anger and with a lot of other things too. But that there's, you know, being angry with the whole idea of being angry with someone. And I had an experience once in a session, a very strict silent session, where I got angry at someone. It's too silly to even explain all the particulars, but I had this driving need to be angry with this person. It seemed so important. I was defending something really that seemed vital to my well-being, and we had this silent argument in a session.
In your mind?
No, with this person.
You were arguing with him?
We were, but we weren't. There was an issue. And, well, I mean, I don't want to. He was. Every time he left the zazen room, he would bump into this shelf where there was a flower in a vase and he'd spill the water. And so the first time he didn't even know he was doing it. The first time I cleaned it up, and then the second time I sort of non-verbally offered to clean it up, and then I thought, no way, I'm not going to do that, and I just sort of backed away, and he got really mad at me, you know, and not a word was said, truly. And then the more I sat, the more I thought, well, this is really so so silly. How silly is this? I made up this reason to be angry, and it had all to do with my not wanting to absorb, you know, stuff for men. You know, be an emotional sponge. It really had to do with that kind of idea. And at the end of the session, we hugged and we just, you know, we had totally just kind of buried the hatchet non-verbally during the session. But it was so much about projection. It was about all of the stuff my mind was making up about why this, what he did was such a trigger for my, for some internal process.
Yeah.
And so it was about projecting and putting it off on him. And the more I sat, the more I thought, this is really, I did a bad thing. I did a bad thing to him by, it was kind of violent, an aggressive thing, by putting this on him. And instead of just accepting and maybe not reacting to what he did and not cleaning it up and just sort of walking away.
It wasn't your problem anyway.
So that's, I guess that's not anything that happened this week, but it's something I always remember. And I always remember this person and how sweet it was when we actually could talk again. And I told him I thought he was a wonderful guy, and, you know, we just sort of let it go.
Well, yeah. That's the best part, when it all goes away.
When it's
gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just realize you're just fine. It's not a big deal.
My mind anyway, can just do such a number, and I totally believe that.
Of course.
Believe it while it's going on.
Of course.
Until I can step away.
We do this. We just do it.
Because so much of the time we're not in a session where we have the luxury of sitting there until we realize how ridiculous we were.
It's true. That's why a retreat is really important, because a lot of things come up that we just ignore during our everyday life, or we distract ourselves so we don't want to think about it. And then we can indulge. We can just keep the story going and going and make it bigger and bigger sometimes. Oh, he really did that thing, and he really shouldn't do that, and he blah, blah, blah. We do a lot of blah, blah, blah. Right?
No, I definitely have my issues with apologies to a slightly idiotic TV show, Anger Management. You know, and I've really struggled with anger much of my life. You know, learned the hard way how harmful it can be if you don't control it and just lash out, or, you know, you don't figure out, you're not able to keep it contained within a reasonable bound. I mean, I don't mean that I never attacked anybody physically or shouted, but people know when you're angry, you know.
Yes, they do.
You know, especially in the workplace, if you get into the habit of getting ticked off at people. I think some people who are in authority can do that and use it. They do use it to control it. But this was a more average person. It usually comes back to bite you in a not very good way. But then my own experience was karma. It was really related to a lot of anger that I had to deal with, especially when I was younger, in my 20s and 30s. It took me many, many, many years to figure out what some of the roots of it were, a lot of it went back to experiences in childhood or adolescence, you know, or relations with one of my parents, you know, or just kind of inheriting this kind of tendency, you know, to blow up sometimes.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but have these things, these grudges and issues and things that really get you worked up. So I'm not as bad as I used to be, or those who disagree. But you know, a lot of my was just getting rid of it. I had to sort of burn up this some of this karma and learn to, you know, stop myself.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I always think of don't be angry, and I think Thich Nhat Hanh has written a whole book on anger.
Yes.
I think he said somewhere, you know, there's this one little infinitely small slice of time. If you know the anger is coming out and is about to explode, if you can just catch it. But that's, you know, and not let it take over your consciousness. That takes a look. That's really, you know, kind of something you can only, unless you're just naturally a really calm person, it has to come out of some meditation practice, I think, you know, putting yourself in another more peaceful place. You know, when kids get mad, parents say, "Who do you think you are?" You mentioned that notion, so I just kind of like, "Well, who do you think you are?" What gives you the prerogative to kind of lash out with the distance for the world, family, or whatever? Nothing.
A momentary experience.
So that's an ongoing.
Well, anger is one of the three poisons, they say. Greed, anger, and ignorance. So it really is essential and we all have qualities of those. And I always think we each of us have a specialty of one or the other of them. I know I'm a greedy person. I don't tend to get angry so much, but boy, the greed is really big time. And people that I know really well, I can think, oh, that person is an ignorant person. I mean, they're not paying attention to things on purpose. And they're letting things go by that they could be more aware of because they'd rather not. Sort of a person with blinders on. And I think we all have qualities of that. We're all doing those things. But we kind of specialize, some of us, in one or the other of them.
Violating one precept for another with impunity.
Yes, yes, easily. Just like that. Well, it's 8 o'clock. I cheated. I have a watch now.
I just assume you knew that.
Well, I did.
Yeah, just like 8 o'clock.
I looked at the watch and it told me. So, do we have announcements?
No, I don't have any.
Nothing. Nico. Yes, please.
On the first week of June, at the Tekoji, we're putting on a weekend retreat focusing on the Heart Sutra. And, you're all invited to come. You can go to the Tekoji website on the homepage. There's some stuff that will lead you to more information and a registration form, etc., etc. So
wonderful.
If anyone's interested.
Great. Do you all know where Tekoji is?
I don't.
It's up in the mountains above Saratoga. Drive up Highway 9 and hang a right. And it's a few miles down the road. And it's beautiful up there. And it has a little zendo. You can take hikes all over. It's surrounded by open space. And they do all kinds of programs up there. You might want to check it out.
Sure.
Sure, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we'll sit for 1 minute.